We'll go ahead and open our planning commission meeting this evening, May six P M, May 25th. Tuesday, May 25th, beginning at six at Community Rec Center. We will proceed to item number two, public comment. And Vicky, if you signed up for public comment, would you like to come to the mic?
Sure.
You would state your name and your address, and then let us know your name.
My name is Vicky Pope, I live at 4164 West Sage Road North. The old part of town. I wanted to specifically speak to item five on the agenda. This is my first planning commission meeting attendance, so it makes more sense, but I don't know whether it's possible to speak during the discussion of that rather than now. If not,
If you want to speak to item five, mind if you hold your comment. What we'll do when we get to those items is we'll have presentation by city staff, so you're clear on what our thoughts are, and then you're welcome to put your thoughts on.
Yeah, I want to.
Can we do that? All right, seeing no one else on the public comment portion, we'll close that part of the meeting and move into item three, which is review recommendation and public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 106 related to landscaping and approved uses in the commercial zone. We'll hear from staff and then we'll open for public comment on that item. Anybody who's here.
Okay. So we had this discussion 2 weeks ago about possibly changing the 30% threshold in the S1 zone from 30 down to allowing lower percent there. 23 has been the number that's been thrown up. In brainstorming how to do this, because if you recall the discussion last time, it was there's got to be an empirical method of determining that number rather than tell us what you want it to be. There's got to be some show your work, show your method. And so I came up with two ways that this could happen. The first way would be that we do require a landscape plan to be submitted as part of a development. And as part of that landscape plan, if they're planning on being doing less than a 30% threshold, we could require them to submit an engineer's estimate of what that cost would be, landscape architect's estimate of what that would cost to install, and then use that as the base number for square footage. And I had a nice conversation with Donald today about rather than a 1-to-1 ratio, I take off 1 square foot of landscaping on my property and use that money to pay for 1 square foot of yours for the value of 1 square foot. It could be a multiplier because there is a long-term saving there in terms of they're not doing maintenance long-term. So it could be, rather than 1 to 1, it could be 1.25 to 1. That's just up for discussion. So that's one methodology. In the memo, you see I kind of list some pros and cons there. In that, I see that the drawback would be that I think it would incentivize the developer to find ways to minimize the cost of the landscaping that they're submitting. However, if the landscape plan that they're submitting meets the code, then it seems like you got to be okay with the code. So there's ways to go about that. The second methodology is more in line with what we've done with Gateway, in that there's a half acre of land that was originally part of the sale. Do you guys all know how this happened? Okay, so it was originally part of the sale of 9 acres, and of that 9 acres, and simultaneously to that, the city was settling a lawsuit with the original developers of the Cedar Canyon development. And part of that Cedar Canyon development lawsuit required us to give them a half acre of land to put their retention base in. So we had to go back to the buyer of the commercial area and say, we have to carve out 9 acres. Well, we did that, and we said, because we're kind of throwing this at you last minute, we'll allow you to count, if you help us upgrade this from rock mulch, which was part of the settlement agreement, to grass, we'll count this towards your open space. And so it changed their multiplier from 30 to 23% throughout their subdivision, just because it took a half acre and made it all grass. Anyway, that's where we are. And so when we get those calculations and they want to pay that, it's simply like, here's the cost of converting that from rock mulch to grass, and on a per square footage basis, this is what your building is short, and it's simple math to determine what that cost is. So you could do something like that where there's a dollar per square foot. That changes over time as materials and labor costs change. You know, anybody that's tried to buy something now versus 6 months ago can probably relate. So before we spent time drafting code on how we wanted to proceed, I wanted to kind of explore these two options, see if there was any thoughts on a third option or how you wanted to go about tackling this discussion.
Okay, so our staff presentation will just formally open for a moment to the public hearing portion, since we noticed it that way. Seeing no one here to address for the public, we'll close that part of the meeting and turn to the commission for questions, comments, thoughts.
I have a question.
Sure.
As long as they develop and meet the code and the landscaping standards, then there really should be a problem. Is there that they have? There's not going to be as much risk of a low quality landscape.
No, I mean, I think you touched on it. Is that, you know, we've established landscape code throughout the SD1 zone. And so when they submit a landscape plan, we make sure that they have the right palette of trees and shrubs. We have to make sure that they have the right trees in the right locations, right? And as long as they meet that, they can do the bare minimum, but it's our bare minimum that we've established, saying here, this is what we were looking for. And so if you take that bare minimum and get that estimate of what the cost would be for the landscape, then you've got, even if it is the bare minimum, you've got a pretty clear idea of what it would take to get that from 23% to 30%.
Well, I was, when I read this through, I was thinking, well, I would think this would be the way I would want that, would be option one. But I wondered if there was any other commissioner's thoughts.
Well, in my reading of it, I actually prefer the option one, but I like the idea that you said with the multiplier. Because just not putting it in the first place, that does save them money.
Yes.
It's equivalent dollars, but then they also don't have to maintain it.
Well, and something just occurred to me, there's also a savings, because if we're just asking for a cost of the materials, there's also a savings on labor that gets achieved.
Right.
Immediately.
So, putting a multiplier in there, I think, is a good idea.
I would suggest that I'm working on it, setting get some rough numbers, but I support if the developer chooses this option, option A, put in the 30%. Option B, if they choose to go to 23%, in view of the economic benefits long term that they're accruing, I think the city could ask for a short term benefit in terms of the multiplier. And I think personally that should be set somehow, so that the developer will recover that cost in, say, 5 years. That way, the city gets 20%, 50% of whatever it does. We have to put some thought into that number. But that way, we get the benefit up front, the developer gets the benefit over time, every 5 years or whatever. It's not even as long.
The only thing I thought was, is this only for new construction? It's not specified with new construction or existing.
Interesting. Yeah, so it's also limited in scope. Because if you think about our commercial zone, you know, we're pretty close to build out. There's a few lots down there. So this isn't. And you saw the plan that we presented 2 weeks ago. It takes a big chunk of the commercial zone and removes it with the shiny shell and the three drive-throughs. And really, you only have, I want to say two lots, well, three lots. You've got one right behind Hart's, you've got one that's associated with the David Weekly homes, and you've got one that's just south of the storage facility. So there's not a whole lot that this would pertain to. It's very limited in its application.
Tell me your name down at the end. I apologize. I wasn't here 2 weeks ago when you were covering the news.
It's Don Holmes.
Don? I agree with Don. I like, frankly, what everybody's been saying. I like option one. It allows the cost to graduate over time as costs go up, which they're doing right now.
And I like the multiplier. I don't know what that multiplier would be, just gut feel. It felt like 1.2, 1.25. Maybe it needs to be higher, but I don't have any reason to push it higher. That's just a gut feel number.
Well, I mean, what I can do is, and I know this isn't apples to apples, but it's fruit to fruit, maybe. We've done a lot of park projects in the last couple of years, especially just in the last year. So I have landscape costs, so I can kind of narrow down what are we spending here in the park on per square foot basis on landscape. And we can kind of break down and see what that number looks like, keeping in mind that it's park versus just made like some landscaping. So there's some difference there, but it should get you closer to maybe a better idea of what that number will look like.
I just think that as long as there's some kind of rational analysis, whenever we hit the ideal perfect number, but if we get it close and there's some rational basis for that, I think it's safe.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the city needs to codify where that money goes. We talked a little bit about that 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so what the city would need to establish is at least one, because I believe there's an expense fund that could be expensed out already through park maintenance and upgrades, or even capital projects from the open budget fund. But there would need to be a revenue account recognizing the receipt of this, so that if there is a question, if you get $10,000, and you can show that $10,000 received in this year in this account, and then you can show here where the city spent $10,000 on landscape improvements somewhere, whether it's in park, whether it's in the SC1 zone, wherever. Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think there has to be a rational nexus of how that money's used.
Okay. I agree.
Okay, any other thoughts or questions?
If not, it looks like our motion is to table, so I'll entertain a motion.
I move that we table item 3 proposal until the next regularly scheduled planning commission meeting and confirmation back.
I'll second the motion.
All right, motion and second. Any further thoughts or comments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. Thanks.
All right, we'll move on to item 4. Which is review, recommendation, and public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 10 related to park strips and landscaping in residential areas. And again, we'll hear from staff first, and then we'll open briefly to the public hearing.
So earlier this year, Governor Cox, he issued a state of emergency for future drought conditions for the state. Last year, Planning Commission, we worked on proposed code for commercial and residential landscaping to include zero scaping and local scaping type of options for them. There's still a portion within the residential areas that both City Council requested that we look at, and additionally staff also recognizing areas in the code such as street side enclosure areas and other areas in the code that also needs to be updated to align better with current practices that we have here. So I'm just going to go down as we go down through the code as it is presented there. The first one we would look at is under fencing, which is 10.5.18.C2, which would be that optional enclosure and street side enclosure area. If you have this map on here, it's this area that is between the curb and this optional enclosure area. So when we have a resident that wants to come in, they're on a corner lot, they want to build a fence on a corner lot, they have to be back 15 feet from the curb. So that area is basically non-usable, and that would be something that we could potentially look at as a zero scape or low bike scaping for that area. So in this, we want to include that. We want to encourage water conservation here, possibly pavers and other hardscaping materials. we still want to leave the street trees to be in the streetscapes. So that would be our first area. The second area is under 10.5.27, which is under our landscaping section A. We want to include conservation methods. We want to give an explanation there. And for this, we do a purpose is to conserve the public's water resources, promote water-efficient landscaping, protect and enhance the community's environmental, economic, recreational, and aesthetic resources by promoting efficient use of water in the community's landscapes, reduce waste, water waste, and establish a structure for design, installation, and maintaining water-efficient landscapes throughout the city. So we just want to kind of give some clarification there. Then down in C, under defined terms, we want to include language that would say preference should be given to living landscape materials that are native, drought-tolerant, or suitable for this climate. Landscaping schemes should also focus on conserving irrigation water by a judicious method of mixing appropriate living and non-living materials irrigated on an automatic delivery system designed to maximize the benefit of water without waste. Pavers are an acceptable material for use in this landscaping strip. So this is the first area that we staff recognize that we need to focus on. When we look further down into under the landscaping, there's bonding issues that we ran across, both bond posted and bond releases. Currently, the practices for the building department, we do not include landscaping strips into the bond when we do an initial build. General guidelines on the inspections include items for such as sidewalk, curb and gutter, your storm drain, roadway, they has to be cleaned, small surface areas, quality of finished surface, they do have to meet the city's design standards. This would not be as a condition to release the bond for the landscaping strip to be completed. We do have further language in our code that allows for a year for the front yard landscaping to be completed for both new builds and existing builds. So we do have that language, but it kind of contradicts each other there. So the bond also goes on to say that it does have to be completed within 9 months of CFO issued, or the bond will be forfeited to the city. So where we don't practice that already, we want to remove that type of language for the forfeiture of bond and for to be included with park strips or landscaping strips as to be used as a condition for the bond. The other one is commercial areas. This is completely different as it's reviewed both by Planning Commission, City Council, staff in order to meet specific landscaping standards. So, and that is a completely different entity as we say here. The other one we want to add is duty of ownership or occupant. This portion under number three, we want to include language that specifically has property owner responsible for the park strip areas next to their property. We've got some properties that they're in a cul-de-sac, they build a fence, but the other side of the fence borders another street. That still means that they are liable to take care of that portion of the street. That wouldn't be the city's responsibility. So every portion of their lot, they would be responsible for landscaping, and that's where this language was created for that specific. The other one is other landscaping. This is where we want to elaborate with different uses in the landscaping strip. Especially, we've had quite a few requests to put pavers, different items within the landscaping strips. Again, we want to keep it to meet our clear vision area, so we don't want anything over that 3 feet threshold. We do have some language in here to indicate large boulders, but we may want to put a cap on that so we do not meet over that 3 feet, or we do have some type of limitation on that for boulders in there. We do want to be able to, for residents, to have these street trees in there, but additionally, if they want to put pavers and other items in that, that's a portion to try to create, to bring down water usage for these residents. The one thing that we do not want to create is parking areas for a lot of these smaller streets. Example up on Doral and Sugarloaf, a lot of vehicles will use the park strip to park there. If we have them pour cement or something to that nature, we don't want to create another issue there. So. The other thing is, let's see, I think that's all of it. Again, by including these options for residents for zero scaping and local scaping these park strips, it gives them that's another small step as we move forward to water conservation. It's not a huge step, but if it does give a resident an option, we do want to give them that if that's what they desire, especially if they want to do a pathway through from one portion of their property up to a back door or something of their house, and it does have to go through a park strip. So.
Staff presentation, we'll open just for a moment for any public comment on item 4. Seeing none, we'll close that part of the meeting and move to the commission for questions or comments about this item.
I have a question for staff. And I apologize for that. Is there a requirement that the middle landscaping be maintained for a certain period of time, a warranty period of 1 year for the landscaping?
It's more of an upkeep. We do have, for example, in our landscaping code, grass, it can't go taller than 6 inches. It would be a code violation if that were the case, if these were in there. So we do have code that addresses that. The only thing as far as maintaining the installation, they would have 1 year to complete that. Now we do say when they come in for a building permit, they are notified at the time that they receive their certificate of occupancy up until that date expires.
So I'm wondering about the concrete in the park strip. Wonder if we could qualify that to a certain width because of the walkway issue that you alluded to. I do think a lot of people have walkways that start in the strip. I understand the parking concern, but if it was only a certain width, you wouldn't have that parking issue.
So I think that would go more toward a path. But again, it wouldn't cover the entire park strip area. But yeah, we could clarify that.
Yeah, I just as worded in 4B, I guess 4C, that seems like an absolute prohibition against concrete.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it does imply that the poured concrete.
So, do you mind?
Yeah,
I mean, there is an exception there for the exception of driveway approaches. Is that?
So, to be totally transparent, I have poured concrete in my park strip that meets the walkway. So it's the width of the walkway that goes up to the house.
You're talking about 4 foot span.
Less than that.
Less than that.
Yeah.
I'm not objective to that. The reason you don't want all concrete, I think you can just visualize that why that's not desirable. Then it does become especially when there's no curb in the city, it just becomes parking.
Oh, good. I don't think any of us are objecting to that. It's just the...
So we can...
you say other than use for walkway surface or something like that.
We're even restricted to a certain width.
Yeah, what about decorative concrete?
I don't think you want decorative concrete.
Probably three.
Yeah.
Oh, they'll just do pressed concrete over the whole thing.
It looks really nice on its initial pour, and then 5 years later when the stain's kind of faded away, it just looks like busted concrete. So an exception for walkways.
Yeah, you say a walkway pavement no more than 4 feet wide or something. Were you done, Jared?
Yes.
I have one other question. Back under definition of landscaping. So that's section C on the first page of your changes. Going to the next page, talks about pavers are an acceptable material for use in a landscaping strip. Do we put any limitation on that? What if they do the whole thing in pavers?
It was my understanding that we would allow that.
You would allow that, but there still is the requirement that there's trees planted. So you would have pavers broken up by trees, like where trees are, because there's supposed to be a tree every so often in park strips, and there's a list of trees that aren't going to mess up the sidewalk with the roots. You could put pavers along the length of your park strip, but there still would be the break up of trees, so it wouldn't be just pavers.
So let's say they choose pea gravel.
We don't want them to do that. That touches on something important. The reason we didn't want pea gravel, wood chips, things like that, is that during wind, kids riding through with their bikes, gets kicked into the gutter, and then there's just no more snow there. We don't want that. So the rock requirement would be that they have to have a rock with about 4 inches diameter so that doesn't get caught in the storm drain grates. It just stays in there. That it doesn't go down and get sucked up in the back truck. So it protects us in terms of it doesn't clutter storm drains.
Then the tree thing, he says trees shall be, should that just be must be?
Shall be must.
Other comments, questions?
You mentioned the height of 3 feet, just of 18 inches. Is that 3 feet going to be included?
That was what we put up for discussion.
We think we want that to be 36 inches, right?
36. So we're actually requesting that to be 36 inches and not 18.
Yeah, there's some nice boulders and xeriscaping that are pretty big, and I like them. 18 inches, please.
18 inches, you can lift up and cause a mischief.
Well, yeah, or take away.
36, you're not going to.
36, no.
Line of sight with 36 inches, that's acceptable, yeah?
Yeah.
You can go to 4 feet?
No, they can't do the 4 feet, but especially in a clear vision area, you have to have line of sight, 45 feet in each direction. So
how high can you go on those? Because you're allowed something, yes?
In the line of sight? 3 feet would be the maximum, yeah. And especially, you know, the other concern would be a driveway area that's next to a driveway area. You don't want to create a blind spot there. And that's the same with the fencing. If it's next to a driveway, it does have to be reduced down to a 3 foot.
Okay. I'll entertain the motion.
I move that we recommend the proposed amendments to Title 10, Chapter 5, 18 and 27 and 6-4-1 report relating to landscaping options to the city council for adoption.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further questions?
And is that including the amendment to the law of walkways, not to exceed 4 feet?
And the 18 inches and the 36.
And not 36 inches.
I want the landscaping rocks to be 4 inches in diameter.
Oh, okay.
There's three.
Okay. I move that we recommend the proposed amendments to Title 10, Chapter 5, 18, and 27, and 6-4-4 relating to landscaping options to the city council for adoption, subject to these three following modifications: that landscaping rocks be at least 4 inches in diameter, that the sidewalks, parking strips, if they are concrete, be no more than 4 feet wide, and we move that any landscape boulders be no higher than 36 inches.
Second.
Okay. Any further questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. So you guys. All right. We'll move on to item number 5, which is review, recommendation, and public hearing on amendments to City Code 10538 related to ground-mounted renewable energy systems. We'll hear from the staff, and then we'll hear from anyone from the public who would like to address this.
Okay, thank you. Staff has asked to take this item up by the City Council. In years past, there's been a ground-mounted solar system that's been installed in the city that is quite intrusive to neighbors. And our current code allows for ground-mounted solar to be up to 20 feet, and then with the systems that they have around, they're basically pole-based, and they kind of rotate with the sun, and it can create quite a nuisance with glare and heat and other things. So there was a request by the City Council to explore an outright ban on ground-mounted solar, and drafting the code, I didn't feel like that was the right approach, so I reached out to some of the city council members and just got a feel for hey, what about this? Because we do have in the city some ground mounted solar that it would want to be outright approved. Namely, if you look at stop signs, sometimes they have a flashing red light, or they have a traffic sign that shows you your speed, those are powered by your solar. If you look at the top of some public utility poles, there's an antenna that is powered by some small solar panels, and that's so that we can read our SCADA system so we know the water level in some ponds. There's also ground-mounted solar that's on top of people's light poles. So if they put a tennis court in the backyard, they put lights in, they have a small solar panel on the top there. So I felt like an outright ban on ground-mounted solar was probably too restrictive. And then in exploring it, we thought, well, how do you visually remove that nuisance from solar panel from being a problem for the neighbors? Well, we thought, well, what about 4 feet? At 4 feet, you can have a ground-mounted solar system in the backyard on a limited scale, but the neighbors can put up a fence, or you would have to put up a fence. That would then shield the effects, so to speak. And I know 4 feet is really small. So then the other question was, what about size? And the size came up to, each solar panel is typically about 15 square feet. So 50 was about where we thought, okay, let's try this. So. It's a drastic change, and so what we're asking for is you have the code in front of you. We would ask that you add an exemption section where public utility poles, public signage, and then ground-mounted solar panels less than 4 feet and 4 square feet would be exempt from these requirements. So it would still allow you to use some solar panels in landscaping and signs and privacy.
Thank you. We'll invite anyone from the public that would like to address this issue. Again, if you state your name and address.
Okay, again, I'm Vicki Pope. My address is 4164 West Sage Road, York. I've lived in Signal Hills for 35 years this October. And I'm here coincidentally because my son came to the property over the weekend. He works for a solar company, and we designed his proposed ground mount for my backyard. My property is adjacent to the green belt. I'm sure you've discussed it multiple times with the owner of that. And my elevation changes from my backyard up to the top level of my property, about 15 feet elevation change. My front yard faces, the reason we're looking at a ground mount for my backyard is that there's a beautiful mature landscaping in the front yard, and the trees there would prevent solar panels on my roof to have any good effect. So my son happened to be in contact with the city today about permitting for my ground mount, and was called about tonight's meeting. We did the math on his proposed installation for my usage, which is very low. It's like a 2,000 square foot home, and I live alone, so very low usage, was 8 panels. With the proposal of a 50 square foot area on the ground mount and a 4 foot height limitation, he said that he could squeak 3 panels in. The system we want has a minimum requirement of 8 panels, so I wouldn't be able to do it. So in order, I guess my question is the reason we're looking at this because of one home that has a unsightly and or annoying installation? And will, have we looked into whether this code change will preclude residents moving to green solutions for their energy usage? Because in my situation, I don't want to cut down my tree. I love my tree, and I don't think anybody wants to cut down my tree. It's deciduous, so it provides shade in the summer and allows heat in the winter, and I love it. But I just wonder whether we're moving to codify something. It would take us in the wrong direction. You mentioned earlier about trying to follow Governor Cox's recommendation about zero scaping and water conservation. I think there's such a huge push for using solar, using as much green energy as we possibly can. So I'm just wondering if this code change will preclude me and other residents from moving forward with that.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. We'll close the public hearing portion of this item and move to the commission for questions.
Well, before I forget it, I have one question. How did we arrive at the 4 feet instead of something perhaps like 6? A standard fence is 6 foot high. Keeping it 2 feet below the top of the fence.
Yeah. There's no, it's not a magic number. It's going into the discussion. Okay. Same thing with the fitness for me.
Is there, what's the minimum efficacy in this one?
No idea.
I would be really willing to for anything. Does a total panel on the ground work?
Well, I assume that the solar panel on the ground would work the same as a solar panel on the roof, as long as it's in the sun. I don't know that that's any different. I'm not a solar panel expert by any means. The instance that they brought up to me about the solar panels is probably very similar landscape to in that it's a backyard that runs up the hillside, and then the resident installed ground mounted solar up on the top of this hill behind their home, out of their sight, but in everyone else's sight. So it became kind of a noxious thing in the neighborhood. And I remember when it was going in, and it's been a few years. This isn't a recent thing. But boy, did we get some calls. And I still have neighbors there that bring it up. So I mean, like I said, this is kind of just for a discussion purpose, you know, and we can talk about the number of panels, the number of square feet. I mean, this is really, if you want to talk about this, this can be your baby. If you want to raise that to 8 feet, 9 feet, 10 feet, I mean, that's where you're starting to get into like how much of an impact you want to have on neighbors. Let me argue the flip side of the coin though, is that you do have accessory structures that still will block views. So we don't in any way, shape, or form protect view sheds, right? We just don't. I know that there's a couple of planning commissioners here that will attest to the fact that we don't protect view sheds, right?
Yeah.
So, Eric, you've been very impacted by somebody that's built right behind you. So I think that on some level you can relate to that that feeling of changes in your neighborhood. And so you want to balance, you don't want to go outright NIMBYism, like we can't do this here, versus what kind of environment we want to create in the community. And I think that's really what the discussion needs to be about, is how tall are these, how wide are these? Because you could also take the approach of, we're going to limit the height, but frankly, if it's in your backyard, I don't care how much it is. That's another approach you could take.
Could we perhaps also look at the ratio of how many square feet you have in solar panels versus how many square feet you have in your backyard?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think that's fair, given that this is treating it as a one-size-fits-all approach when all of our backyards are very different.
The solar panels right now count against the 50% usage?
No, and in fact, in the backyard, I would even like the city to propose getting away from that, the 50% usage, just because it seems a little bit intrusive. In that, let's say that I have a big backyard, and right now it's all grass, but I want to put in a pickleball court because I really want my neighbors to hate me. I put a pickleball court in, but it takes up 60% of my backyard. Well, I no longer meet the 50% requirement from the city, but I mean, it's my backyard. Why should the city care about a pickleball court back there? I think that's kind of the discussion. The city really cares about what happens in the front yard. That's why we talk about the landscaping in the front yard. In the front yard, we want to be maintained. But if you stop mowing the backyard, I don't care. So if I don't care if you mow your backyard, do I care if you have 3 solar panels back there or 8? I don't know. Food for thought.
Well, my concern is, if she put 8 panels there, how close is her neighbor that the heat?
I don't know that the heat is a big
issue. Glare.
Makes it unbearable with the glare heat. That's
what I mean.
You know, if they're the way that they're angled, sometimes it can't be helped. And it's not just your neighbors that it could affect, too, the glare. And let me give you an example. When I started with the city about 10 years ago, you had people down near Deerfield Elementary installing solar panels. The glare that it was affecting was people up on Canyon Heights, up on the hillside, like, you know, a half mile away. But my understanding is that solar panels have developed in a way that really minimize the amount of glare now. So it's not as big of an issue, but it still is an issue.
And for me, that's what makes this issue different than accessory buildings. Mm-hmm. You don't have that same glare factor for neighbors to deal with.
True. So with that being said, I mean, there's ways that you can play with this code and saying, okay, here's how we really envision it. Because I'm just going something at the wall. Tell me if you want to still.
I think there's, when you say ground mounted, as you had already identified, that means a lot of different things. And we might have to get a little more specific.
Yeah.
I like that's not on the document we've got. Obviously, if you have small, you know, solar panels for lights or landscaping lights, or that, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking
the little ones, the 1 or 2 square foot ones. I don't have a problem with that. The other thing is, are they on poles and the rotating type, or are they fixed, because if they're fixed, we can potentially put in verbiage to indicate that they would minimize glare to neighbors. Mm-hmm. You can't eliminate it. I understand that. That's not possible. You have windows, you're going to get some glare to the neighbors.
No, if they move, then...
Then you can't minimize it because they're always pointing in a different direction.
I guess you can require that they be fixed.
Well, what
I think most are fixed nowadays.
What if you are analyzing this on a case-by-case basis? Almost like a special use permit. I mean, I know that's more work, potentially, but you have the ability of asking all these questions each time the application is made.
Let me ask you this, your interpretation. It seems to me that it would be very prudent for the city to have a set of guidelines and rules, even if it was obviously a special use permit, that these are the guiding principles, this is what we're looking for. It's a conditional use permit.
Yeah, I said special. I mean, it's conditional, but one guideline is you can't glare your neighbors to death.
Seems fair.
I mean that to me is the only way you're going to be able to avoid that issue is almost looking at that on a case by case basis.
I'm attracted to that, and I'll tell you why. When we do city zoning, when you ask how tall a building is, do you mean how tall it is or how high it is? And those are two different things.
You're an architect.
Well, the one means, you know, how high above grade is the building, and the other means how high is it relative to the rest of the city. Mm-hmm. So on a case-by-case basis, we can look at somebody who lives in a bowl or who has maybe 4 feet above her property is still 8 feet below her neighbors who live there, and maybe we're restricting this particular situation well below where we need to, where we've got somebody who lives on a hill where everybody's going to see it, have to look through it, or they're, you know, everything's flat and they want to put in a 15-foot high pole. Maybe there's a way that we can work with folks. I think you asked a question, what's the minimal system that actually has an impact on your electric bill? It'd be good to know that. Is it 8 panels? You know, below that, all you can do is heat your pool.
Well, what the technology changes.
Well, and it will. It's already so much in the last 25 years.
Panel related, whatever system.
Yeah, well, that's true. I don't know how we define that, but if it's 4 by 50 square feet, and the way the technology is currently, nobody can do it because it doesn't do anything. Maybe we've got too restrictive, because I'm not attracted to the idea of all the solar panels on the roof myself, because I like how a house looks. So I'm almost prefer something else. But within reason.
So and ground and solar, you can go with so many different approaches. So I think this is a very interesting approach to this issue. Aaron spoke to one in Cedar Hills that is kind of like a problem for neighbors. There's another one in Highland as you drive. You know the one that's like a big A-frame in the middle of the front yard? And it's just so horrid. It's a great word. So, I mean, it can be done in a scalable way for the yard, but I've seen it done poorly as well. So what I'm hearing is maybe approach this as a CUP, that way we can take it on a case-by-case basis. But even with a CUP, there has to be certain criteria that we're looking for, and it's got to be, it has to go back to that section of code, I think it's 10.539, where we established these are the negative effects that we're trying to mitigate. And it's noise, it's smell, these aren't obviously applicable to the solar panels, but maybe we need to look at that code as well in terms of, does this address the negative effects of ground mounted solar? And if not, we may need to address the CEP code saying, here's a negative effect in a neighborhood that we want to start considering.
So is glare the only negative effect, or is height visibility?
It does have height visibility. Noise, jammer flicker, low frequency vibration, or disruption of scenic view, or other vision impact.
So visual impact
specifically add that or not, but that might be, and how, you know, what do we mean by that? And if I'm in a second floor bedroom and I'm up on the hill, I'm going to see it. Is that a problem for me? How do I define that and mitigate and ask the owner to mitigate that? I don't know if there's comparable language in neighboring cities that.
I've been hard to find on this one. And our topography itself lends itself to some unique challenges, in that there's a lower end of town and a higher end of town, and so much built on the hillside that, anybody that's on the hillside here, you can have a house at grade here and a house at grade, your next door neighbor behind you, and he's 20 feet above you, you know, so even if you had solar panels on top of your roof, it could still glare into their windows. It's a unique, sometimes it's a unique situation. So we can table this and then maybe do some more research.
You touched on my concerns with whatever standards we've written, being clear and objective and units, and whether that's, and this is always going to be some subjectivity, that's, you know, where, how much where. I'm just interested in seeing what is proposed to be here.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't like number D, and can we not have that piece? I don't know what I'm talking about.
The only thing I'd be interested in is perhaps tying it to
percentage.
As a percentage. And having said that, 50 feet's a pretty low percentage. I'd probably dial it up quite a ways for a minimum.
I agree.
Rather than a ratio of a lot, you're thinking a ratio of backyard.
I am looking at the ratio of the backyard.
Despite the normal.
And not tying that really small. I mean, when we had our pool in the backyard, we had solar heater panels on it, and they were larger than 50 square feet.
Okay. Just the pool.
Just the pool. And they were not electric, they were just flat black, so we didn't have the glare issue. We took it out.
I'm also concerned about the height. If it's 4 feet, that means you can't mount a camera at an angle.
Yeah, but they're all at an angle.
Would
you actually
do that anyway? I don't know if you do that anyway, but I think, like I said, the 4 feet is, at this point, it's a little bit arbitrary. You know, we can't be arbitrary in the application of the code, but the creation of the code, there is some local arbitrariness. That's just a starting discussion point. I'll see what other cities may be doing there. They do something. I think some cities actually just have a bit around that solar. As we talked about it, there are some instances where it makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't, speaking just maybe for myself, but I would not, I think you said the same thing, but I don't think we want to, I think we want to find something that's reasonable, that makes sense, and maybe it's on a case by case with some pretty strong guidelines.
Okay.
I'll entertain a motion then.
I move to table the review recommendation for background and solar panels to include an addition of the official pole lighted, pole mounted, small, as well as identifying height limitations, making adjustments to the size of the system.
I'll
okay, we've got a motion and a second. Any further questions? Seeing none.
Sorry, question. So that would just be amending the code and not looking at putting it as a condition of use.
When you table, staff just comes back with the changes. You don't have to define it in the table motion.
In this case, when it comes back, I very much assume that it's going to come back not only with 10 by 38, but with another section of code 10.39 that would be needing to be amended as well. So I think it should have only been here for a minute.
Any other questions or comments? Seeing none, all those in favor of tabling this item, the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Hopefully that's all right. Thank you for being here. You're welcome to stay. It's exciting. Driveways are next. Driveways. Item 6, review recommendation of public hearing on amendments to City Code Title 10, Chapters 2, 4, and 6 related to driveways. Again, we'll hear from staff first and then briefly open up public hearing portion.
Okay. We talked about driveways about a year ago, and I have been working on this code for about a year. And every time I think I'm at the finish line, I'm not. Okay, so the reason it's back before you is because it's been completely overhauled. And let me start with 10.2-1 definitions. We're adding definitions with a driveway, a definition of a driveway, a definition of a fire apparatus access road, and the definition of wildland urban interface areas. And the reason that is because we don't want to treat driveways that are less than 60 feet in length as fire access apparatus roads. Right? Because once they become fire access apparatus roads, they have to meet certain requirements, especially in terms of grade. But with that being said, we do want to define what a fire access apparatus road is. And these definitions come straight from fire code and from what's called the Wildland Urban Interface Area code, WUI for short. But we do have a wildland urban interface area in the city, picture Canyon Road. Everything east of Canyon Road is wildland urban interface area. The reason that that's important is because when we talk about fire works restrictions, it's always this interface area that is up against the hillside that we're talking about. That's our big concern. And the wildland urban interface area has its own code, and Utah has its own urban interface code as well. So, some of these provisions are taken from the Utah Wildland Urban Interface Code. So, starting in the next section, Article B, in design criteria, you can see there that we're removing driveways from these cut and fill slopes, right? We're saying that common drives, that when there's a shared driveway, when there's a fire access apparatus road, public, private streets, these have to conform to certain requirements of the subdivision. Your driveway could be outside of that a little bit. And then in A, you see where there's a driveway, and we are allowing up to 12%, unless it's otherwise approved by the fire marshal or city engineer designee. Up past 12%, up to 15%, there would need to be a code-compliant stairway or emergency personal access. So the problem we're running into is that on the hillside, there's some driveways that are horrifically steep. Again, we're near build out, so some of these problems we're just left dealing with forever. But where we can, we want to fix these. But when a driveway is iced over and it's at 20%, it's very difficult for firemen to get up with their gear, load somebody onto a stretcher, and get down with their gear safely. So that's why the 12% is the magic number. 12-15%, we're saying, you can go past 12, you can go up to 15, which is still a pretty steep driveway. But you would need to have a code compliant stairway so that if there was the need for public safety personnel to go into the building, they have a safe route. Right? So that's outside the wildland urban interface area. Residential driveways inside the wildland urban interface area have a similar code provision on the percentages. But in addition to that, there was a request from the fire marshal that if they have these driveways that are greater than 12%, there also be an area in front of the home where they could safely fight a fire without the structure coming down. So that's the difference in beauty. And then C, driveways in the wildland urban interface in excess of 150 feet in length. They have to be provided with turnarounds and turnouts. And that's this language comes directly from the the wildland urban interface code itself. Those thresholds there. And then it's repeated variously throughout the coding, the planned townsite project, and then in the H1 development zone. So there's not any difference there. It's just applied anywhere when we talk about driveways, and specifically when we talk about driveways in the road, because that's where we see the steep slopes. With that being said, I'd love to hear questions you also have to do about that.
Okay. We noticed this as a public, thank you very much. Thank you, staff. Chandler, we'll open for a moment. The public hearing portion is meeting on this item. Anybody from the public here, please here to address that? Seeing none, we'll close that portion and turn to commissioners for their questions and comments.
I have one. Sure. We've got driveways less than 60 feet and driveways in excess of 150 feet. What's going on in the intervening 90 feet?
Yeah, that's a good question. They're treated as fire access apparatus.
Okay, so they don't have to have turnarounds.
They're not long enough that they require turnarounds, but they're long enough that they can't be in excess of 12%.
Okay.
Because that's the max grade allowed by in sections 10-60-71. Or the start by the city code, by just building standards. No, I apologize.
What's the radius of turn?
Say that again.
But what's the radius of the turn?
That's defined in the fire code.
Do we need to state that? That was my question as well.
No, the reason I say that is because anytime there's a plan that comes in, this is a very good point. Anytime a plan comes in, it's going to be submitted to the fire marshal for approval. And so they're going to look at these turn radius. Radio and say, can our apparatus turn around here? And as the apparatuses get upgraded, I mean, the turning radius has changed too. So there's a generic turn radius that we send to developers when we talk about planning parking lot commercials on it. And so that would apply here. So yes, there is a standard there.
Chandler, are you going through the rest of this, or is the rest of this in support of what you've already covered?
I think it just essentially repeats itself.
So, one term used in here is critical angle of utilities. And I wonder if you may
want to define that.
Just the critical angle depends on the soil type. You know, you can stack rocks a certain way, you can't stack pea gravel the same way, and you can't stack loose dirt. The reason I ask that is at the bottom of the canyon, we're seeing the formation of the natural angle of the pose over time because it was estimated too high or never estimated, and so that
goes flat.
Go flat. And it's just slowly as the goats and everything else play around up there, we're seeing what the natural angle of the pose is. So it becomes critical, especially in our area.
Yes.
Either it's established by an engineer based on soil type. There are formulas out there, but they don't vary. They're basically your average. They don't vary based on soil type. So somebody needs to look at it critically as we're talking about.
Okay.
You know, how a grade in science we're
on. I can help down a definition there. I'm happy to. That's a good point. And there may already be one in fire code.
There may be.
That we can piggyback on.
I was looking at it this afternoon, and there were multiple definitions out online.
Oh, yeah.
Source.
I hate pulling in definitions from various codes. The reason I like the sources we use is because we're beholden to them on some level, fire code, wildland and observer interface code. So because we're already beholden to them, it seems apropos to use those definitions.
Yeah, that's
where I can.
I read through, I thought it was really well written, but that was really the only thing that I was. That question, that and the Don mentioned about defining some of the terms like turnaround and the turn.
I think those are. I'll check, but I'm fairly certain that those are in fire code because there's a difference between a turnaround and a turnout gallon.
Other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll
I move that we recommend the proposed changes to 10-2, 4, and 6 related driveways. And I'm not aware of any changes.
Adding a definition.
Adding a definition of, say it again.
Angle of proposed.
Critical angle.
Critical angle of proposed.
I will second the motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any additional thoughts or questions? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. All right, we'll move on to item 7, final item. Review recommendation and public hearing on final plat approval for Lakeshore Drive Trails Subdivision Plat D. And we'll follow the same time.
I'm surprised to see Bradley go again next year. So this is Lakeshore Trails Plat D. Similar to what we did with Lakeshore Trails Plat C, where there were three lots and the middle lot was divided between the two lots, creating two lots out of the three lots. This is very similar to that. There's two lots on the north side of Hunter's Court just off of Canyon Road. They're very, very small lots, and again, it's the topography of these lots is very challenging to build on. So I think in light of that, when you look at 0.48 acres, it's a fairly large lot, but how much of it is buildable? Yeah, it's very difficult. So they're looking to combine those into one lot to make it one larger lot.
Okay, that's staff opening it for anybody from the public here to address that item. I see none. Close it over to you and turn to the commission for questions and comments.
Is this going to be irreversible? Or will they be able to subdivide it to a later date?
Depends on where to put the house. If they find a way to put a house on where one of the lots would go, they could go back in and subdivide it back to two lots. That would be fine. But my guess is that they've evaluated this and said this is very challenging.
Yeah.
And it's the same owner, one person on 14 and 15.
Same owner of both of them, yes. So my guess is that home placement is going to prohibit future subdivision, at least in the next 30, 40 years, all that those houses there. Hopefully not.
Yeah, I personally like this. I drive by there all the time and look into that small cul-de-sac and wonder
how.
The two homes that are there are beautiful. I'm sure it could cram two more beautiful homes that are really like the area. Combining those two.
Being that it's so simple, that's why we're doing preliminary and final having the land.
Any other thoughts, comments, or questions on this one? Seeing none, I'll entertain the motion.
I move to recommend the amended Lakeshore Trail Plat D for approval.
Second. Okay, motion and second. Any further comments? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimous. We'll move on to the final motion.
I will second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.